All right, guys, welcome back to the Defining Endurance podcast. I'm your host, Coach Andrew Simmons of Lifelong Endurance. And let's talk about mistakes. Let's talk about learning. Let's talk about the five most common things I see athletes struggling with as they go through their running career. Now, this isn't just for new people and beginners. This is for everybody. These are mistakes that even I'm struggling with and making over and over. It's the things that I watch out for in my athletes. It's the questions that I have to ask them when I'm first starting to hear about aches and pains or I'm hearing about struggles. These are the areas that I go to. These are the important little bits and pieces. So let's dive into five mistakes. But before we do that, let's talk about the idea of mistakes is an idea. We tend to beat ourselves up when we make mistakes and kind of feel like we should hit ourselves in the head when we struggle with some really small things. Something as simple as not changing our shoes every 500 miles or not taking care of our bodies. These are hard things to learn, but I really want to give you guys a piece of advice here in two directions. One goes back to our episode with Melody Fairchild. What we focus on changes. But number two here is that mistakes are our best teachers. And without mistakes, we won't learn. So you must make mistakes to go further in your running career. So to help you guys go a little bit further today, let's talk about five mistakes I see every runner making. Welcome to Defining Endurance, a podcast focused on providing actionable insights for endurance athletes. Whether you're an athlete just getting started in endurance sports or a veteran looking to gain an edge, the Defining Endurance podcast is here to ask curious questions with athletes and fitness professionals. And most importantly, dive deep on current training topics so you can become the best version of yourself. Let us wait no longer. Let's dive into this week's episode. Welcome back or welcome to the Defining Endurance podcast. I'm your host, Coach Andrew Simmons, and I wanted to talk a little bit today about the most common mistakes that I see as a coach. And this isn't just for new runners. This is even for my runners, that have been with me for years and years, athletes that are absolutely at the top of the sport, and athletes that are just getting into it. These are just some of the most common mistakes that I see people get out of practice of, or even some common mistakes that kind of tend to plague athletes because it takes too much time. So let's dive in a little bit to what these mistakes are and maybe the psychology or the other bits and pieces behind why we might see these issues. All right, the first most common issue I see for my athletes is cutting either the cool down short or not giving themselves enough time to actually recover from an effort. Now, this isn't simply just, running the end of your workout too hard. This may also mean not doing the small things like, using a massage gun, rolling out, stretching, doing some of the smaller things that are really necessary to make sure that you're fully recovered for the next day. This is something that, can really make a huge jump for you, especially if you're just getting back and starting into a new cycle. When this episode comes out, we're probably going to be partway through the big marathon section of buildup. And if you're not taking the time to sit down and use a Theragun, to sit down and foam roll, or, taking time to do some flossing with a band, things like that are hugely beneficial. But you have to find the things that actually work for you. As a coach and even as an athlete, when I make time for these things, I'm able to get in more mileage each week. I feel better throughout all of my runs. And it's not just a gimmicky thing. My muscles are looser. And when my muscles are looser and my body feels better, I'm more excited to get out and run. I'm excited to push my body a little bit further because it feels good to push my body further. There really isn't anything holding me back. Number two is kind of in line with this. This goes back to my previous topic of 2 days, 2 weeks, and 2 months of a theory that I have as a coach. And this is really about ignoring minor pains. Hopefully if you're doing the foam rolling and things like that, you know exactly what you're dealing with. And I always like to share with my athletes that the best thing you can do is a dynamic warm-up. My typical dynamic warm-up I'll lay out here for you guys. I have a video of it on YouTube. I can put into the notes. It's butt kicks, high knees, karaoke. We do A skip, B skip, side shuffle, lunges, and then we do these things called heel taps, and then we do knees to chest. And this is such a great way to figure out whether you're ready to run. If you've had something that is a little bit pointed, if you have something that's uncomfortable, if you can't get through the dynamic warm-up without that kind of, you know, getting flared up or becoming painful, you're not ready to run. You're not ready to get out the door. And so when we start to ignore these minor pains, this is where the rule and the theory starts to fall in, is that it's always best to take 2 days off. Simply put, take 2 days off when you're having a minor pain. It's really not going to set you that off. And when I say minor pain, what I really want you guys to think about is a strained calf muscle. Maybe you wore a pair of flats for a workout, and it was just a little too much. Maybe you should have worn it only the last 50% of your reps instead of the whole workout. And they're really, really barking at you. Well, take 2 days to cross train. Take 2 days to, you know, either just do aerobic runs and skip maybe the next major stimulus that you have. Talk with your coach and figure out a strategy to get beyond some muscular pain. Now, if we're talking about bone pain, if we're talking about, you know, a hip flexor strain and things like that, absolutely take those 2 days and do some low impact stuff. But if you ignore it, and this is where it all comes together, is that if you ignore an injury that could have taken 2 days to rest, it's then going to give you 2 weeks of so-so training. And if we continue to have the issue at 2 weeks, that usually that strain might turn into a tear, that, you know, feeling of a bruised foot pad, or you know, feeling like we've got some pain in the outside of our foot, those things could turn into you know, a low grade stress reaction, and that's going to take us from 2 weeks of lost training to now 2 months, and we're fully on the sidelines, and we're really not going to be able to get the training that we wanted. So 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, and this is really kind of what follows you when you ignore issues. So keep yourself loose, keep yourself supple. This absolutely goes back to hydration. This absolutely goes back to taking care of your muscles, getting regular massages, dry needling, all of those things. The third thing, and I alluded to it a little bit, is really kind of working through tiredness and soreness, you know, and really replacing easy aerobic runs when a workout may not be there for you. You know, I have a lot of people that just grind. And if you know me, I will fully admit that I have a little bit of a vendetta against David Goggins. He's an awesome dude. He is absolutely a motivational character that is needed, I think, in many, many people's lives. But what he also creates is a paradigm where people think that if they aren't pushing themselves to the brink of injury and, you know, complete and utter pain, then they're not getting what they need. And I've talked with a number of my athletes about this who see him as a very motivational character. And I have to kind of teach them out of that behavior, that I have to push behavior, because that tiredness is your body screaming at you that it needs something. If you're falling asleep in the middle of the day because your training sessions are so hard, then you're either under fueling, you're under sleeping, but you're most definitely under recovered. And that pushing is great when your body can recover from it. I'm all for that Goggins mentality in the middle of a workout. That's awesome. But when you're tired and you're beat up, pushing yourself over the edge constantly just leads to overtraining. It leads to injuries, and it leads to a mindset that you are not enough if you are not doing X, if you're quote unquote pussing out. And I really, really hate that. And if you're not in the pain cave, you know, these are things that as a coach, I really, really hate, because it doesn't create a sustainable level of training. It doesn't create a sustainable mindset of how you train. You know, everything that I've tried to create as a coach is about being able to give yourself a workout and a stimulus, and then follow that up with a recovery and treat your body nice, get a lot of sleep, do the recovery, so that you can come back and hit it hard again later in the week and then go be able to perform on a long run. Yes, the grind is amazing, and I love training hard, and I love helping athletes train hard, but you should only be grinding if your body is recovering from it. Otherwise, you're just putting yourself in a meat grinder for no reason, and you're beating it up senselessly. So the third piece here is really about, how do we replace that? That mindset really needs to be more holistic, in my personal opinion, is that when we're struggling through something, if we have outside stressors, if our body is not fully recovered, maybe we underfueled, underhydrated, and we didn't set ourselves up for success, and it may not just be those outside things like work, family, those other bits. It may that you have made a mistake and that you need to learn from it. The best mistakes are the ones that we make for the last time, but our mistakes are also our greatest teacher. So when it comes to tiredness and soreness, and you're having a rough day, I think about one of my athletes, Sean, you know, his new job, just, you know, moved across the country. He's got two young toddlers under the age of two. And, you know, him and his wife are newly, you know, married in the last couple of years. This is a huge change for their family. And you know, Sean wants to train for some really high level races, and he has a really keen eye on performance, you know. And we hit a point in these last couple of weeks as he started up this new job in a new location, where it just wasn't going to happen. You know, getting out for an hour and then a 7 mile tempo run and all these other things, his body just couldn't handle it. And should he go out and grind? Absolutely not. That's going to show up in his work. He's a radiologist. We don't want him messing any of that up. It means that he's not going to be as good of a dad at home. He's not going to be as good of a husband as he'd like to be. And he's also not going to feel great about who he is as a person, because he's going to see himself constantly failing workouts. And so I said to him, I'm like, Sean, what I really, really want you to do is be happy. And we're going to learn how to be excited and happy for the next couple of weeks, about 30 to 45 minutes a day. And when we feel good to get the workout in, we'll get the work in. But right now, trying to grind through and hit workouts that, yes, they are in the trajectory and they are part of this athlete's build plan to bigger things into the future. But if he breaks now, if he gets an injury now, none of that matters. And the grind was not worth it. So I will highly encourage anybody that is in this mindset of push, 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 push. Give yourself some grace. And I know that that's so hard. I know it's hard to tell yourself that that 30-minute run when you were supposed to do 60 minutes, or a 30-minute run when you were supposed to do an interval session, might sound like you're quitting on yourself. But there's a huge difference between quitting on yourself and not doing something in the direction of your goals for that day and completely just sitting it out. If you're going out and you're swimming, you're lifting, you're doing yoga, you're doing an easy run, you're going for a bike ride, any of those things, they're still in the directions of your goals because they have an intention. You know that you need to put energy towards that goal today. But guess what? There are things outside of your control. You don't control the weather, but you also don't control the stress that randomly lands in your lap. You don't, you know, when your kids get sick, when work becomes out of control, you don't control those things, but your body still has to adapt to them. So absolutely, when it comes down to it, default to an easy day. Take that 30 minutes, take it for yourself, be selfish, and enjoy the hell out of it. Let's move on. When it comes to your health and longevity, you hold nothing back. You understand what it means to push harder, reach farther, and go the extra mile. This relentless drive runs in your blood. That's why Inside Tracker provides you with a personalized plan to build strength, speed recovery, and optimize your health for the long haul. Created by leading scientists in aging, genetics, and biometrics, Inside Tracker analyzes your blood, DNA, and fitness tracking data to identify where you're optimized and where you're not. You'll get a daily action plan with personalized guidance on the right exercise, nutrition, and supplementation for your body. And when you connect Inside Tracker with your Fitbit or Garmin, you'll unlock real-time recovery pro tips after you complete your workout. It's like having your own personalized trainer and nutritionist in your pocket. For a limited time, you can get 20% off the entire Inside Tracker store. Just go to insidetracker.com/defining endurance. That's insidetracker.com/defining endurance. Let's move on to number two. Let's talk about
actual progression here. And I'm going to speak mostly to the athletes here that are not coached. But something to watch if you're working with a younger coach, a more junior coach, or maybe someone that's kind of coaching you outside of their comfort zone. You know, whether that's someone that's never coached 100 miles, or maybe this is a triathlon coach that's coaching you for an upcoming marathon. What I will really encourage you to do is, number one, track your training. This is everything. And I think that this is really the harp of my my second point here, is that you have to track your training. You have to understand how much load you're putting on your body, and you absolutely have to take load off of your body. If that wasn't apparent in my last rant, then this should solidify it. Really stick to, you know, no more. I love that 10% rule for a reason, and I live by it as a coach, because it allows me to create sustainable training programs. It allows me to build up athletes that don't see a considerable number of injuries. And last but not least, it also allows me to really create athletes that not just perform well once, they perform well cycle after cycle after cycle. And this is where it really comes down to it, is that, you know, 10% a week may not seem like a lot. And the reality is that it isn't, but it builds momentum. And one concept I'll talk through here is periodization. You absolutely have to have some building, right? You start at 30, then you go to 33, and then you're at 36, and you're at 39. You got to take a rest week somewhere in there. You can't just keep building, because your rest time is your absorption time. It's when you absorb that fitness and really kind of create a new homeostasis for your body. Otherwise, you're always digging a hole. You have to dig a hole that you can crawl out of and put some dirt back into it, and really think about, you know, the idea of almost kind of building a bigger ladder, building a bigger bucket. I try to use this analogy with my athletes a lot, is that, you know, this 10% rule allows us to build a bigger bucket. If our goal is to put out a fire, and that fire is a marathon, maybe that you know, smaller fire is every single week when you've got a workout or two workouts a week. Your goal isn't to empty the bucket every single week. Your goal is to figure out, how much water do you need to have in that bucket to put the fire out adequately? If you're going from 4 by a mile and you're trying to get to 6 by a mile, you have to have enough water in that bucket to get through it. And that bucket really comes down to this idea of capacity. And capacity, this bigger bucket methodology, is that when you have a bigger bucket, not only are you able to run more, you're able to do larger workouts, and your total capacity as an athlete is larger. Now, that bucket still has to be specific. You need to have it specific to the event that you're doing. But the reality is that your goal is to be able to, on race day, empty that bucket and shake that thing dry as you cross the finish line and leave everything out there. But during the week and during the months leading up to it, if you're not refilling that bucket, you're not going to finish workouts. You have to use the days in between to slowly refill that bucket. Now, also think about trying to create and build a bigger bucket while you're training. You're adding on another wood band. If you think about a barrel, you think about, you know, any number of things that you're building. I don't care if you're building your bucket out of Legos, whatever analogy works. But as you're adding a layer each week to that bucket, you're slowly making a bigger bucket. Sometimes you have to take a week and not add a layer. You need to go through and make sure that your bucket isn't leaking in other places. Have you had that massage? Are you hydrating? Are you doing the right nutrition? Because it doesn't matter how big your bucket is if it has a massive hole in the side of it. You're the one in charge of making sure that your bucket doesn't leak. That's on you as an athlete. My job is to inside, you know, give you the inside look and say, hey, are you thinking about X, Y, Z? Are you looking for the leaks and the cracks and the holes in your bucket? Okay. Those are the things that are going to derail your training. I can help you spot as many of them as I can, and I can do my best to put my finger in a hole for a little bit and help guide you. But I'm also not a physical therapist. And that's where I'm going to give you advice. I'm going to connect you with a guy like Dr. Riley, someone like that, who's going to help take those little leaks out of your bucket. You might be weeping a little bit of water, but a little bit of weeping water might be a seam that absolutely bursts and derails your training. So with that said, let's build up sustainably. Let's create a bigger bucket layer by layer and piece by piece. That's what you're doing every single week. So the last one here might seem really, really simple, but it comes down to equipment. I'm a big shoe nerd. I love shoes. I love super shoes. I love trail shoes. I have a pair of shoes for just about everything from tempo runs to intervals to multiple pairs of spikes to, you know, you name it, I've got it. I have my easy day shoes. I've got my easy day shoes if I'm on the trails. I've got my fast racing trail shoes. I've got my marathon shoe all the way down to my 5K shoe. I love shoes. I love technology. But the other thing that I also love doing is buying shoes and running in them as much and as often as I can. So multiple pairs of shoes are what allow me to run sustainably. Here's the point. The number one thing that I see athletes do is overuse their shoes. Now, this may seem like a small bicker, but as a coach, if you're replacing your shoes every 500 miles, truly 500 miles, then you're good in my book. Now, this means that you are putting your shoes on before you run, you're running in them, and then you're taking them off. You're not going to go wear them for work. You're not going to wear them around to go get groceries. Those shoes are for running and running alone. I will take 3 pairs of shoes to a workout with me. For example, if I'm going to do, say, 3x1K and 4x400, and I've got a 2-mile warm-up and a 2-mile cool-down. Well, I'm going to warm up in my easy day shoes, something nice and soft, something very comfortable. I'm going to do my dynamics. I'm going to switch shoes, say maybe into a pair of Saucony Endorphin Speeds, maybe even the Pros. And I'm going to do my Ks and my reps in those. I'm going to take a set break, and I might put my 400s on, or excuse me, my spikes on for the 400s if I'm getting ready for a track race. Or I'll put on a pair of flats to help train the tissues in my lower legs to get more used to a lower profile racing flat. So with that said, I'm giving my legs different stimulus, and I'm also not overusing any one pair of shoes. This is how you can, yes, you end up having to buy a number of pair of shoes, and yes, the sport can get expensive that way, but you're never really overusing them as long as you're tracking the mileage on them. And of course, at the end, I put my easy day shoes back on, and I go back out for 2 miles, and I feel pretty good about them. And these different stimuluses to your lower legs and things like that are good and they're healthy. But when you overrun a pair of shoes, you're pounding out the foam and you're kind of creating the same stimulus to your legs over and over in the same pair of shoes. So with that said, if you're running more than 500 miles in your shoes, replace them. If you're always using the same shoes for your easy days, your workouts, things like that, start to build some diversity in your shoe rack. I highly, highly encourage it. Be shoe curious. I will say the last thing here, when it comes to shoes, I am not a guy that is a huge, you know, zero drop thing. For me, is that's a choice. If that's something that you've gotten into, if that's something that you enjoy and those shoes work for you, by all means, yes, use zero drop. But don't convert over to zero drop if you're not having issues with other shoes. When you have less cushioning or zero drop, you're trying to go towards the barefoot thing, I will ask you a very simple question, because I've had athletes ask it to me almost monthly. What benefit do you stand to gain? And is the time it takes to transition over worthwhile? Now, shoes and brands like Vivo Barefoot, for example, they're great. They make a great shoe. They're high quality. And yes, there's research that shows that they have helped strengthen athletes' feet. Do I think that they are the absolute best shoe for high performance running? No, I don't. I think they are a great shoe to wear walking around. I think they are a great shoe to wear in the weight room. I think they're a great shoe to maybe do some strides in the grass in and protect your feet. But are they your everyday, all day, you know, silver bullet shoe that does everything? No, they're not. I like cushion. I like carbon plates. I like things that help us go fast. I love mechanical advantages. I'm a coach that, yeah, I do think that we should be investing in shoe technology. And I test for companies. I work with shoes all the time. I give design feedback on comfort and design and the upper of the shoe and, you know, outsole and midsole, all those things. That stuff I love. And so I'm going to encourage athletes to utilize shoes that feel comfortable, that work well for them, and either, you know, correct pronation and supination, all of those things. Now, then where does Vivo Barefoot and all these other companies really fit in? And I'll end on this, is that they are great for helping us not get too comfortable with one certain kind of shoe. Have shoe diversity. Wear different shoes. If you want, wear zero drop shoes all day, every day. But when you get out to run, give yourself a little cushion. Give yourself a carbon plate on fast days, because it's fun to run fast and it feels good to run in cushy shoes. So enjoy it. You shouldn't have to sacrifice comfort for an idea. With that said, these are my really big five things that I see runners make as mistakes. Now, do I think you're a bad runner, a bad person if you're making these mistakes? No, because guess what? I make them too. I will fully admit there have been many weeks. I'll look back at the last 5 weeks in my training. I've been way over the 10% load. I just spent 2 weeks at our high altitude camp. And I can tell you, I need this week to absorb it. This is my rest week. This is the week when I need to absorb that training at altitude. And I know that I worked diligently every night to keep my body in check so I could show up for those kids and I could show up and help them get to the top of their mountain. I had to keep my body in check to be able to do it. So if you're struggling with these things, this isn't a slap on the wrist. This isn't a, you know, hard call out to every runner out there who might be making these mistakes. I hope this podcast and I hope this episode has given you some insight into areas and ways that you can make some changes. Now, I will put this out there, and I know we don't use this podcast to advertise for a whole lot. If there are things here that you are struggling, these are the things that we as coaches here at Lifelong Endurance are absolutely experts at, and we are here to guide you, and we are here to help you make these changes and help guide you along so that if you've been struggling with small injuries, if you haven't been able to build that bigger bucket, and if you're struggling to consistently train without injury, let's talk. Feel free to look us up, www.lifelongendurance.com. That's where you can find us. That's where you can get to know more. If you're still kind of outside and want to know more, you can follow me at coach_Simmons_runs on Instagram, as well as Lifelong Endurance on Instagram. I hope this episode was helpful. I hope this gave you guys some insight. I look forward to sharing more solo-sodes with you in the coming months. See you guys.